Welcome back to the Global Greek Influence Podcast. I'm Panayota Pimenidou. To be up to date with the news from the Global Greek Influence Podcast and suggest your topic, subscribe, like, and review the Global Greek Influence Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor FM, Amazon Music, and four more podcasting platforms. You can contact the Global Greek Influence through the podcast, Facebook, and Twitter accounts, the podcast website, globalgreekinfluence.com, and LinkedIn page. Dr. Kostas Silidis is my guest today. Since 2021, Kostas has been CEO and co-founder of The Intended Future, which provides data-informed design for the automotive industry, AI-powered new product development, advanced data analytics, and consumer intelligence. Kostas is also an associate professor in University West and part-time associate researcher at the Chalmers University of Technology in Sweden, where he studied mechanical engineering and holds a PhD from the same university on industrial and material science and thesis on perceived quality of cars, a novel framework and evaluation methodology. Kostas was the recipient of the University of Michigan Ann Arbor Research Grant to conduct work as a visiting scholar at Optimal Design Laboratory. Kostas also worked as a consultant on perceived quality at the Volvo Car Group and as a program director of visual communication and multimedia in Mumbai, India. Welcome to the show, Kostas.
Thank you, Panayota. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Really great honor to be here and to talk to such a wide audience. So thank you for this opportunity.
It's my pleasure, Kostas. One sees you have gone a long way, starting from Thessaloniki in Greece, then to Mumbai in India as a program director on visual communication and multimedia before arriving at your geographical destination in Sweden, where you had your undergraduate, postgraduate studies, academic research, industrial career, and entrepreneurial business path. Would you like to tell us about those experiences? What was your motivation or inspiration? What was the sequence of events? And is there anything like intentional planning and future?
Right. Very interesting question. All right. When this journey has started, actually, there was no much intention behind it, to be honest. But at the same time, probably it's that part of a spark that many of the Greeks have in their own, in their soul, which bring us to this long journeys and odysseys, trips. So in Thessaloniki, I was primarily dealing with visual communication during my working time. And at the same time, I always was striving for more. And to be honest, the whole journey was always what I call interdisciplinary. That means that as soon as I took the offer from the Singaporean Educational Corporation, Raffles Educational Corporation, to work at the Mumbai office in India, for me, this was a quite eye-opening experience because I never traveled so far in my life before. And of course, it's not just about the travel, but it's a completely different culture, a mix of people with very different cultural backgrounds. So that's obviously enriched me a lot. And I have to say, I was quite lucky because during this way, I met a lot of people who helped me on the way, advised me, guided me. So it was a very interesting journey because this work in Mumbai, it was primarily, of course, educational in my case. But that actually brought me to the thought that I need to excel more if I want to continue this path. And this is how I start thinking about to begin PhD studies. And this endeavor brought me to Sweden, which was not intended again. It was rather accidental. And what was more accidental that it's actually brought me to the automotive industry. So I started this journey in 2013 in Gothenburg as a PhD student with topic of perceived quality. At that time, it was very, very early. Early development of this topic, at least for the academia. And that's how it started. That's how it started rolling. That's how we are here today, almost 10 years after.
You conducted research, of course, during your PhD studies, then as a visiting scholar in two instances at Vilnius, Jedminas Technical University, and the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, also as a postdoctoral and associate researcher now, as an associate professor in media production, also an advisor design research to Geely, Design Global, and CEO and co-founder of the research-led Intended Future. Why can researchers bring transparency to the new market and economy?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of titles. It actually also scared me what you just listed, because I never thought it in that way. It always goes in the same direction anyway. What's good to bring research to the industrial settings or to the business settings? Usually, researchers perceived by industry or business as some people out of space who takes a lot of time to conduct simple things. And the usual case in industry is we don't have a time for that. Things need to be done yesterday. So we don't have a time for research. We don't have a time to think. We need to do the things, otherwise competitors will be ahead of us. But today, the business environment and industrial environment has changed so drastically that if you want to win this race, you actually have to slow down, sit and think. And here's where academics are becoming more valuable, I believe, for the industry and for the business environment, because they bring a methodology, they bring a methodological approach, I would say. They bring a repeatability, and they help industrial leaders and to the business leaders not only to generate the new knowledge, but also to save this knowledge and to apply this knowledge into the different areas. So that means in the long run, it actually saves a lot of time and money.
I didn't want to scare you or anyone else when I started listing your expertise in research. I just wanted to underline that you conducted research in different environments, settings. Therefore, your perspective is more holistical when it comes to seeing research from different sectors of the economy. Something else that you mentioned regarding the value researchers and academics bring to the industry and the economy, which was about seeing under a greater umbrella matters that need to be resolved, also bringing in the methodology. I recently attended a Green and Black Belt Six Sigma program. I realized that all the elements of Six Sigma are exactly what researchers do already. Every single element, the methodology, the bottlenecks, everything about it. Yeah, apart from encouraging researchers and academics to be more actively involved in the industry, I would also say that it's worth taking the Green and Black Belt. I think they already have the skills.
I absolutely agree with you here. The Six Sigma belts, product management professional from Product Management Institute, all the type of certification, they actually research and academia backed. So obviously, I agree, anyone from industry, if they have opportunity to take it, and from academia as well, just to refresh and to condense it in a nice way, it's actually very advisable.
Now, as customers of many products, including those of automobility, we look not only into the technical aspects of vehicles and their excellence, but also the quality attributes we perceive individually for a system as a whole. But you and other engineering design and manufacturing quality experts know that a system is made by several components, and you have to fill the gaps of perception, information, design, and semantics between the designer and the customer. Can the perceived experience quality be delivered in automobility?
Yeah, this is extremely difficult topic, I would say, to address, because simply it includes us, humans. And as soon as humans are included, it's becoming extremely high level of complexity. But there is a way how we can reduce this complexity and how we can address these issues. It is important, and especially right now, because we are actually back in the roaring 20s today again with current trends for the electrification and the current trends for sustainability. You could see how many new car brands appeared during last 5 years. and it will be more of them. And I'm only speaking right now about America and Europe, but if you look towards the China right now, I think has over 300 electric car brands. So that means the amount of work and the amount of choice for the customer is becoming extremely high and difficult. And the winner in this race will be the one who will be able to deliver a clear design message to the customer of what is the purpose of this vehicle, what is the aesthetical features of this vehicle, what is the functionality of this car, what value it will bring to the customer, because the values can be different. It could be would say hedonic values would just elevate your self-perception, or it might be very, very utilitarian values. For example, if you live in some rural areas, you need a reliable car, which will not break on the way, which will deliver the goods that you need, which will deliver your supplies and so on. So you something that you can rely on. At the same time, you also want a comfort today, and you want the specific functionality. So what we're trying to do here is to applying multi-dimensional, I would say, approach, which includes areas that you have mentioned, but as well, psychology, gamification, any type of advanced engineering. And we also adopting right now heavily in engineering science approaches from the social sciences, which before, like let's say 10 years ago, that would be a big no-no to use any type of, let's say, grounded theories in engineering science. But right now, it's actually acceptable because we are dealing with something big and with something unknown, especially with the rise of autonomous vehicles, depending, of course, on the level of optimization. But still, even the simple driver assistance systems are already quite advanced to the level that sometimes we don't know how to predict the customer reaction to this.
We will talk later on about the autonomous vehicles, but for now, let's focus for a little while on the perceived quality in design. So what is the difference between excellent perceived quality and optimal perceived quality? And are these two elements only in focus of the industry, mm-hmm. also of the customers?
The difference between optimal perceived quality and the difference between, let's say, excellent perceived quality, I would say this is a question of affordances. And if we would say even more simple, this is a question of money and time a specific car manufacturer can put in the specific car. So if you have enough time and if you have enough money, you can make a perfect car. Technically, everybody going to like, or even if we say even more precise, the target group for what this car is intended for will be extremely happy. Unfortunately, this is never the case. None of the even global brands have enough money, but even if they do, they don't have enough time, because the time of when the car is designed until the car is produced is very critical, and it's extremely shrinking right now comparing to what we had 10 years ago. So let's say if 10 years ago, from design until production, it took 5 years for the new car, today it's probably 2 years, maybe with some delays, 3. So it's like the time has shrinked almost twice, but the amount of work also grew up because of complexity of all these new systems and the perception of the customers. So it's a question of the time and money. And for this reason, actually in Chalmers, we have developed this perceived quality framework and perceived quality attributes importance ranking methodology, which able to measure the impact of specific engineering attributes to the perceived quality. Literally, we can tell with this methodology where company has to spend their money and where they have to put an effort if they want to sell this car in America, in United States. And we worked almost for the last 7 years on this methodology. It became quite successful. It was validated in the real settings and the companies like Volvo Cars, like China Euro Vehicle Technology, and Geely cars as well. It's ended up that perceived quality framework right now was transformed also into the startup and supported by Chalmers Ventures. That's why I have so many titles, but it's still the same job blending academic experience industrial. In there, we have this startup. The difference with whatever existed before is technically how do we blend a customer's opinion, so the customer's data and customer intelligence, how do we blend it with the internal knowledge of a craftsmanship, or it's another word for the perceived quality in the car industry, from the companies within, because every company have their own culture of working with these issues. So it's a quite a unique mix, at the same time providing very repeatable results, quite robust results. But one thing I have to add, probably our listeners should know, that perceived quality from the any company perspective, this is the end of the product development process. The beginning starts when we're designing the car. So it's a design, and then it goes to the design quality, and then it ends into the perceived quality, and there customer come and make judgments. So the final, the big equator coming and say, okay, am I going to buy the car or not? So this is the difference between these two.
We see that there are gaps to be filled in by the automotive industry between excellent perceived quality and optimal perceived quality, even to satisfy the perceived experience of customers. And then we have this predictive tool that transcends many scientific, engineering, business, and commercial sectors, which is artificial intelligence. How could artificial intelligence utilize engineering knowledge, human senses, and product quality to deliver quality in future automobility?
The one approach is, again, it's as you can imagine, quite complex. But if I will try to simplify this process, we have identified through our research that people actually can judge and make pretty good judgments just by looking to the images of cars. And we identified even to the extent that people can judge, for example, haptic properties, how something feels, just by looking to the picture. So they can clearly distinguish would be that a cold metal or soft leather or maybe something else. And it's also, our brain is actually an amazing tool. So these memories that we have, they immediately evoked. And what we have measured statistically, that actually it's a pretty good results, not really different from the reality people produce just by looking to images. And as you can understand, the only idea that we can judge something only by looking at this open the huge window of opportunities for usage of machine learning. Because as soon as we replace or maybe not replace, but rather augment the current practices where engineers and designers have to look to the actual physical car and make their judgments if something needed to be fixed or not. So if we can augment this with the machine learning algorithms, which will already provide the suggestions to the designers, what's good and what's bad, what needs to be improved, what needs to be left as is. So that would first remove a huge amount of subjectivity, which is unfortunately still a lot present in the car industry. And this will remove also biases, because we are humans, we are heavily biased, especially if you work with the car industry, you eventually will become heavily biased person towards different judgments on the quality. And of course, after removing subjectivity and human bias, it also saves a lot of time. So can you imagine that the typical process of complete vehicle verification takes sometimes days? In this case, machine learning could enhance and save a lot of time, just shrinking this time towards probably hours. So this is very utilitarian approach, what I'm describing right now. But at the same time, it opens really, really wide window of opportunities for the future development.
You mentioned the human touch, not just literally, even metaphorically, to describe the creative space for engineers. And this human touch can become a tool to make more informed engineering decisions and incorporate human senses through artificial intelligence, which perceives quantitative data to deliver quality design. We know human senses and touch are cognitive processes. How could cognitive processes mapping be quantified?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting question, because this is what we are working right now. And this is one of the reasons why, first, as academic and together with my colleagues from academia, we have introduced a so-called a data-informed design. And this is quite a different thing from what we usually hear around, which is data-driven design. And why it's different and why we are promoting this. It's not just for the sake of different wording or naming. The approach of data-informed design is a joint initiative of Chalmers University, University of West, Royal College of Art, Professor Cyril Diels, Hochschule Niederrhein in Germany with Professor Bastian Quattelbaum, and some other researchers. So what is behind it? If any academic ever would step into the design room, I mean, in the room with car designers, and we'll try to introduce them some type of a magical black box with machine learning or artificial intelligence inside, which will help them to design cars, and will tell this, okay, this is data-driven design. Probably they will immediately put him out of this room because designers naturally against any type of these approaches. It's also lays down in our educational system. When we educate designers, car designers, from the first grade, from the very beginning, we teach them to break rules. We teach them to break any boundaries, to express themselves freely. And of course, if someone comes later and tells, all right, this program will tell you what to do, it's simply contradiction among the behavior. So this is one of the reasons why we introduced the data-informed design, where the data itself and the output of machine learning algorithms should be seen and can be seen just as another tool. So designer has a pen, designer has a clay sometimes to build a clay model, and designer has a data. And this data just inform designer about what possibly the intended customer would think about the design intent. That means the human touch is still there. So it's a designer with his or her years of experience, a gut feeling, any type of a creativity, all what we human have, what differs us from the machines and the robots. So with all this human touch and spark, we can make simply a little bit more informed decisions if we have these data served. The typical example would be what American car drivers value the most in their interior of the cars. So we have this data to clearly explain. Then it comes to the explanation of the things like the last example. In the past, for example, Tesla cars were perceived as extremely advanced in their software, but probably quite poorly executed in terms of mechanical parts. In terms of how it looks. Right now, with this data that we gather, we know that this is not actually the case. There's something else why people are choosing Tesla, why Tesla Model 3 was the most sold car until, I think, last month worldwide. So these interactions, they're coming only with the data, but the data does not dictate us what to do. So it's the final word is a designer or engineer who should decide what's the best for the customers, just having this complete picture.
You mentioned the popularity of Tesla vehicles worldwide. Sometimes I think that within these cognitive processes, most people would also go with the flow. If they see a trend, they must definitely follow it, especially when it comes from an authority. So there are many, many parameters to consider here. Autonomous vehicles use a combination of cutting-edge technologies, including sensors, cameras, radars, and artificial intelligence to travel between destinations without a human operator. How important is cutting-edge technology in autonomous vehicles compared to the perceived experience quality?
It is very important because the autonomous vehicles as an idea is something new, and the new to the extent where people don't have a reference. If, for example, someone will introduce a new car with a completely crazy new design, we still have in our mind the reference of another car of a previous generation. And that's how we can compare how far, let's say, the designers went comparing to the existing car. But for the autonomous vehicles, here we have a blank state because there's nothing to compare with. It looks like a conventional vehicle, but at the same time, there's no driver. We don't know how customers will react to this vehicle being a passengers, but we also don't know how the people will react just being, for example, a pedestrians when this type of vehicle passing next to you. So would be you scared of it? You know, there's no driver. You have no idea how it will behave. Because usually, again, just a crossing a crosswalk, you look at the eyes of drivers just to understand, is the car going to move or not? What is the intention? So you try to make this eye contact. So now imagine there's some strange box standing next to the traffic light. And this box is huge and you want to cross the road. So what would be your reaction? What would be your perception of this box without knowing its intention? So right now, this is one big question. One of the first attempts to address it, we did together with Professor Cyril Diels. We published a paper on autonomous cars taxonomy and autonomous vehicles perception. This is just initial approach where we just framed a theory behind it and also introduced a data-informed design and number of other definitions like what is design features, how we see it. But the idea behind, again, is similar to what we did with perceived quality. So we're trying to decompose this big thing into the smaller attributes based on our sensorial input, because we approach anything with our senses, with our vision, with our touch, with smell or whatever. And that means as soon as you can decompose that big structure of aesthetical perception, of the functional perception, of safety perception, that was paper about safety perception. So as soon as you can decompose it into the bottom line attributes, you can measure these attributes one by one. And you can establish relationships between these attributes. And that means once we decompose it, we can reassemble it again, but already with a knowledge. And when I'm saying with a knowledge, this means the data knowledge, either statistical samples, either large data, either maybe big data if we're super lucky. So this then will become a little bit more understandable with the main intention being more predictable, because all what we want is to predict the future.
One final question, Costa, before the end of this discussion that gives insight into the future of the mobility by intention. We tend to categorize periods of evolutionary progress by 1.0, 2.0, and so on. In theory, we are at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution 5.0. So everything becomes 5.0. What is your vision of quality 5.0 in product architecture and development?
Right. Here's, I definitely have this dualistic view on it, because academic tells, yes, we have this race of next industrial revolution, because the industry 4.0, just to remind to our listeners, this is a cyber physical systems. So right now we're moving to the next level. But industrialist takes a more pessimistic side, telling that we are not ready even with the 4.0 and we're already jumping into the 5. However, what I would say is, if we speak about the quality, it is obvious that quality 5.0 should be and can be defined as everything what we had in the previous iterations, plus the measurable context. And the measurable context, this is something which was really like an airy definition. So this is where we're going. And the success will be only if we will be able to, not only to define this, because how we define design features. For us, design features is a physical entity, it's a functional purpose, but also the context. So when all these three dimensions are working together, and when I'm saying working, that means we can measure it, and we can, and if we can measure it, we can repeat it, we can reproduce it with the same results as a normal scientific method works. So as soon as we achieve this, I could say, yes, we have reached the quality 5.0 state.
Thank you, Costa, for accepting the invitation to the Global Quick Influence podcast and discussing an intentional future through the perception of automobility 5.0 quality.
Thank you, Panayota, for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you all for staying until the end. Stay tuned for another podcast episode every 2 Sundays on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and 6 more podcasting platforms. Until next time.